So if you love playing pickleball, if you love playing tennis, if you love going golfing, but your shoulder hurts every time you play, you don't want surgery or you don't want to give up the sport, this episode is for you. So by the end of this episode, you're going to understand why shoulder pain happens after returning to activity, what most people are doing wrong, and how to rebuild your shoulder health properly so that pain doesn't keep returning. So Tanya Zhuge, founder of Tonic Physical Therapy and a doctor of physical therapy who specializes in helping people move pain-free, is here to discuss all things shoulder pain. And I'm super excited because I know that I would love to play pickleball my whole life. It is so much fun. Tanya, it is so good to see you. We're seeing a huge rise in shoulder pain from things like pickleball and tennis and similar sports. It's really great to have you here, but can you give us a little bit of a update? What's going on with shoulders these days?
What's going on? Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here speaking about the body and educating people on taking care of their body so they can stay active at all ages. I've been working with patients for 2.5 decades for everyday athletes, pickleball, tennis, golf, and even some professional athletes. And most of the time, shoulder pain actually isn't from one injury. It's something that builds up over time, and it's usually preventable. The main things that one might have to look out for is or consider are the volume, like the amount of that they play, the number of times per week, their mechanics, and then their fatigue zone. I can speak a little bit more about those things if you want to hear more.
Yeah, absolutely. I know shoulder pain is a huge thing. If I'm thinking of my own shoulder situation, I know that my shoulders tend to be like a little bit inward. I don't have full mobility. I'm going to be 42, and I know that, or I've heard that hormones also play a role in shoulder mobility. So, yeah, please tell us more.
Absolutely. They're finding out more and more every day as they begin to do studies on women because a lot of the previous studies that have been done on 150-pound males, so because the woman's body was too complex for people to actually study. But they're starting to come out with more studies and more information about women's health and estrogen and the role it plays in our muscle strength and our muscle elasticity and all of that. But back to just general shoulder issues, people tend to feel when they play a sport, they'll tend to feel some rotator cuff irritation. They'll feel some pain in the front of the shoulder, which is usually the bicep tendon. And they often have a shoulder, they need to pay attention also to when their shoulder fatigues during these activities. Because that's when you really get into the danger zone. Not when you have pain, but prior to that, when you feel your movement patterns start to disengage and your shoulder fatigues, because that's the injury zone when you get into when you get into the danger zone when you start to fatigue. Now, you mentioned that your shoulders are kind of inward and forward, and that is probably the most common thing that I see among my patients. I feel like everyone has advised patients and clients to always push their shoulders down. So, contrary to popular belief, I usually tell people to pull their shoulders up and back. Because I'm finding that people are not pulling their shoulders up and down. They're actually pulling their shoulder into this anterior depression position, which tightens the pec. It tightens the muscles all around the brachial plexus, which is the netting of nerves that come off of your spine and operate your entire arm. So this excessive forward and down, or as you say, inward position, is actually the biggest culprit. I did my doctorate study on brachial plexus injuries. And one of the major things that causes the issue is that very position of being forward and down with overactive pecs. And then the muscles in the back are overstretched and overweak. Now, the shoulder engages the best when it hugs the back of the ribs. There's a position where the shoulder blades are supposed to hang out on the back of your ribs. And when it does that, you will engage your entire core when you hit a ball. You know, your shoulder is weight bearing on the back of your rib cage. So when you hit that ball, you're hitting it with the force of your whole trunk. If the shoulder blade is up and forward or down and forward and sort of hanging out off of the rib cage, then when you hit a ball over and over again, you're actually just overusing your rotator cuff and often overusing your forearm muscles, and you're not even accessing the full strength of your body. And that's the kind of thing that compensation pattern is the kind of thing that causes injury.
Interesting. So I guess my first question is, what does it actually mean to relax your shoulders? Because I've had physical therapists tell me that I need to relax my shoulders. Like during the day, if I'm stressed, I find my shoulders kind of ride up a bit towards my ears. And then I can hear my coach telling me right now, relax your shoulders, and get them away from your ears. So what does relax your shoulders actually mean?
Well, now there are a few, probably two different compensation patterns that people do. So some people are sort of squeezing forward and up and squeezing their pec. I find very few people are actually having their shoulders up to here. Sometimes they're overactive, but I actually never tell my patients to relax their shoulders. I think it's the, yeah, I actually tell them to pull their shoulder in a diagonal pattern up towards the back of their head, like they're trying to scratch the back of their ear with their shoulder. And what
Okay.
that, and to hold that, and that it's going to feel unnatural, completely unnatural when they do it, and to hold it for a minute at a time, because most people's shoulders are not squared off. They're like 2 inches below a squared off position, and they often have to pull them up and back. Just by holding that position, you stretch the pec, or you elongate the pec, which is everyone's issue for the most part. And then you teach the muscles in the rhomboids especially to turn on. Now, the rhomboids are more tonic muscles, the name of my company, which are the muscles, they're more postural, that well, they have higher numbers of tonic fibers in them, or postural fibers compared to phasic fibers. And so when you turn those muscles on, you train them by holding for like a minute or a period of time. And if you do that simple little movement pattern of the shoulders up and back, not up and forward, and you hold for 1 to 2 minutes, and then you forget about it, you relax, you'll often find that your shoulders are in a better position and you've relieved some neck pain and even some shoulder discomfort. Now, I would suggest looking in the mirror when you do that, because when you lift those shoulders up and back, they're going to feel like they're touching your ears if they've been very low. But when you look in the mirror, you will be surprised to find that they're actually just in a squared off position and they're not as high as you think they are. And it's probably going to take several weeks for you to get used to that as the normal positioning. But that will do more good for 99% of people than just saying relax your shoulders, in my opinion.
Right. That's interesting. Does the dominant side have anything to do with shoulder? I guess what I'm asking is sometimes I notice that one of my shoulders is lower than the other, and it tends to be the one that I use as my dominant hand, like to throw something. I've also noticed in yoga class when I'm looking at other bodies that shoulders are uneven. And so is it common for your shoulders to be uneven, or is that just an overuse thing as well?
It's very common, actually. That's one way you can usually identify someone's dominant shoulder. It's often lower. I mean, that was like PT 101 school. I think it's also part, I don't know what percentage, but I think it's also because of compensatory movement patterns. You know, like maybe it's the phone in your right hand where you shrug and you do this all the time, or you overuse or you use that shoulder unmindfully and without it pressed against the back of your rib cage. And so I think there is a portion of that that is because of dominance, repetitive pattern, as well as it being the dominant side.
Got it. Okay. So back to a couple other things you were saying as well. So you were talking about the postural muscles. And so, and you related it to the name of your business. So what do you mean by that? You described two separate sets of muscles.
So there's tonic muscles and there's phasic muscles. The phasic muscles are the big mover muscles, like when you do a bicep curl, you know, or you cup something. It's like sort of in general the big bulky muscles that everyone loves to look at, you know, when you go to the gym, that sort of thing. The tonic muscles are more of the stabilizing muscles, the nuts and bolts that are kind of weave your body together and hold it nice and stable. And so those, a lot of my therapy, regardless of what I'm training, is work focusing on getting those muscles to turn on. And those phasic muscles will jump in and try to do the job when the tonic muscles aren't doing well. And then that becomes part of the problem, is that the phasic muscles are overpowering and that the deep postural muscles are not holding strong enough. And the stronger you get those, you develop those outside muscles, you relatively make the stabilizing muscles weaker.
Interesting.
They have to gain strength to support all that steel on top of the building. You know, you
Right.
can't pile more and more steel on and not have more nuts and bolts like holding the foundation together.
Yeah. So then, what is the number one mistake that you see people making once shoulder pain shows up?
Number one mistake. That's a good one. It would have to be what I said earlier, actually, is that like pushing the shoulders down and forward. It usually ends up being down and forward. Maybe their intention is down and back, but tightening up, there's a cross pattern in the shoulder where it's supposed to have range of motion in all four of these directions. And so they tend to overactivate this forward and down position, which messes everything up. It tightens the muscles over the brachial plexus. It tightens the pec. It turns off the muscles in the upper back, which are the ones that we really want to use. That would have to be the number one. That, and then ignoring it, saying, oh, it'll go away. It'll be fine.
Playing through it, just continuing on playing.
Pushing through it instead of listening to it.
Yeah. So, what about stretching? So, is stretching good for your shoulders?
A huge fan of stretching. We all need full range of motion. So if you don't have full range of motion and you're not you're moving through full ranges of motion, then yes, you need to be able to access all ranges of motion. But there are tricks where if you trying to explain it in a not so like technical way, but if you there are agonist and antagonist muscles, like say the biceps and the triceps, one's on the front, one's on the back. So just by engaging the triceps in the back, it automatically shuts off the bicep.
Right.
So you can do the same thing with postural muscles, you know, like again, just by engaging the retractors in the upper back, that automatically, in a sense, stretches out the pec. The tight muscles in the front. So I'm much more of a fan of those types of movements or activation patterns rather than just sort of passive stretching. You know, yoga is fantastic because you're not doing passive stretching, you're actually activating the muscles and loading the muscles as you work through these full ranges of motion. So it's not just someone pulling on your arm and passively, stretching it. And that's the kind of thing that will maintain itself. You'll get more range of motion if you're using the muscles through the full range of motion.
Right. So being really mindful of the movement that you're making with your body, sounds like it's really important. So what about body mechanics? Why is the shoulder rarely the real issue? I know that my mind was blown about 9 months ago when someone cracked my big toe and it literally like changed the whole dynamic, my whole leg and my knee and my hip. And like I felt this release. Like everything is so interconnected. So why does the pain like show up there?
Oh, there's so
Oh,
many
there's
reasons. I could talk about this forever. Well, we have, our body is a kinetic chain. So a lot of times when you feel pain in the shoulder or the elbow, the issue is not necessarily there. The issue is usually somewhere in the kinetic chain before those two points that is not moving. And that body part is getting the brunt of all the movement. Instead of the movement coming through your thoracic spine or your upper back, which it's supposed, like when you turn and you rotate and you hit a ball, that movement is supposed to come. I mean, we could take it down to the big toe, actually, but let's just start with the thorax. You're supposed to have this movement through the sternum, even through the hip. You're supposed to have this rotatory movement. And so, when all of that doesn't move and the shoulder is the only thing that moves, you're just cranking on that shoulder over and over and over again. And it's doing too much work. And it's also just doing too much of the range instead of having the assistance of the entire kinetic chain.
Okay, so how do we become more aware? Like, where do we even begin? Someone out there who's like, all right, I want to start utilizing my body as a whole, and fixing it at the root issue. Like someone who wants to play sports forever, but they don't want to get surgery. Like, what would you tell them?
It depends on your awareness, because some people need more help than others creating that awareness. If you generally, if you've been an athlete or you've worked out your whole life, those clients tend to be a little bit more aware and they can take a couple little cues and they can look in the mirror and they can go, oh, yeah, you're right. And they can start to change it. Other clients who really have no connection with their body require a lot of, a lot of training. If someone wanted to, like, just a quick tip for someone who wanted to up their pickleball game or their tennis game and become aware of their movements, I would say get in a mirror with your racket and just start pretending like you're hitting a ball and just start to look and see where your movement comes from. Like if you feel like your whole body is rolling into that movement, or not. That again, that can be a little challenging to see or to notice without some help from a good physical therapist. But that's one place to start. And then to warm up with the movement of the activity that you're about to do, maybe shorter strokes, maybe, like warm and just repeat and repeat and just notice at what point your fatigue starts to happen. And then maybe that movement is not as full as it was before, and start to notice, like, if you flick the ball, do you flick the ball with just your wrist, or just your shoulder, or do you see your whole torso and then your hip and then pushing off the big toe? Do you see all of that coming into the movement? And that takes training. You might want to just do that as an exercise to prep yourself for the sport you're going to perform. and build up your tolerance, because when you're playing a sport, you're having fun, and you may not be paying so much attention to your form and to your body. So it becomes even more challenging to do that when you're actually playing. So see if you can do it in the mirror while you're paying attention to it, and then build up your endurance to maintain those movements before you start impacting with the load of a ball and the number of repetitions that you might do in a game.
Right. Yeah, I'm imagining myself learning how to hold a golf club for the first time right now and how foreign that felt. Because it didn't feel natural. And it took a long time. It still does. I don't golf that much, but it still feels a little foreign because my body wasn't used to swinging like that. And so I was so tempted to do like the Happy Gilmore swing or something like a baseball type swing because I just wasn't used to that. I was so conditioned to swinging a baseball, not a golf club, which is so different and uses a different position, etc. So constantly like having to think about it and do it, repeat it over and over again was so helpful in getting my body to understand and learn what that's supposed to look like. Otherwise, I was overcompensating and just going to use something, defaulting to something my body thought that it was supposed to be doing based on how it was trained in the past. And so it's interesting. And then we end up hurting ourselves because we're, using different muscles. So I guess my next question to you is, sometimes pain is a warning versus a trigger. And sometimes it's pain is something we can work through. How do we even start to understand the difference?
That's a good question. Given the way our society functions, and the way most people are brought up to behave in regards to athletics, I would say,
Yeah, it's like work through the pain. That's not right.
so wrong. It really is so wrong. And it's not convenient either. It's not convenient to say, oh, I'm hurting, so I'm stopping the game right now. Maybe it's more convenient to actually build yourself up to the level that you need to before you start playing, at that level, or start playing at a lower level so that you can train your form and your mechanics to hold up for higher or more intense games. I mean, I would a little discomfort of a one or two, that goes away quickly. That most likely is okay. If you're having next day pain or a lot of pain 2 hours after the match, that's inflammatory type pain. So that's not, I mean, that's bad. I fear that my answer is not going to be pleasing to most people, is to listen to the pain and back off. It's not that you can't continue to play. You just have to learn to play better and with better form, and then so that you can continue to play in the long term. We're going for the long game here now, and every sport has its differences. The reason why pickleball is so can be so difficult compared to tennis in terms of the body is it doesn't take as much force, but there's a lot of repetition and there's a lot of quick reactions. And people are deceived because, oh, it's so, oh, I can do it and it's not as hard as tennis, but you do way more, you perform way more repetitive, faulty actions because it doesn't take as big of a swing and it doesn't take as much force to get the ball across the net. So that's where paying attention to fatigue, to shoulder fatigue, and to when your form fatigues, to take a break if you can. Sometimes you just need a break of a couple minutes for your body to reset itself, and then you can come back to a good form again. But that old adage of push, push, push through it really has done no one any any favors,
Yeah, totally, totally. What's the difference between a sharp pain versus a dull pain?
A sharp pain versus the dull pain. In general, a sharp pain is usually going to mean some sort of trauma or some sort of nerve issue. I mean, it could be some quick impingement, it could be some very specific trauma, and that's definitely something that will it'll typically stop you instead of you making the decision to stop. Dull pain's kind of a general question, but I mean, dull pain can happen from many sources. It can I'm not sure what do you mean exactly by a dull pain? Do
I
you have an
guess
example?
which one is when I'm in a yoga class and we're doing certain stretches, I'm always told to watch for sharp pains because that can be dangerous. Whereas a dull pain may just be something that you can still work with and stretch through. And so, does sharp pain signal different, something could be wrong, and a dull pain, like, are they different signals?
In general, yes, sharp pain is usually more traumatic and more of an issue and a red flag than a dull pain, absolutely. But a dull pain that is not relenting is also, something to be wary of. If
Right.
it's just a fatigue, like your muscle is burning and you're fatiguing, but you're still able to maintain the form, that should be okay. But if it's some kind of a deep, dull pain that is sticking around for a week, that's a concern that should be checked out.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. If someone wants to return to sports safely, where do they begin? Say they have some shoulder issues right now and they're looking to return in the summer. What would you tell them?
From a general sense, I just have I have like 100 answers to that question when you ask. Again, listen to your body, determine what kind of symptoms you're having. Are they occurring while you're doing the sport? Are they occurring immediately after? Pay attention to those symptoms and when they occur, whatever pattern you can find that they're telling you. If you're feeling some, if you're doing an exercise or, and you're feeling a little discomfort, that's generally okay, like a 1 to 3 out of 10 pain. And if it goes away immediately when you stop the activity, in general, that's an okay type of thing. But if you are doing something that is causing higher levels of pain that lasts for a long period of time, you definitely need to back off. You need to get someone. If you can't figure out what kind of compensatory patterns that you're exhibiting in your body, you need to see someone who can analyze your body and let you know what is happening. A lot of people just are not even aware. Even some of my athletes or people who are aware of their body, it's always helpful to have an outside source to look at it. Make sure that you start to move the parts of you that are not moving. Because even though you may have the pain in the shoulder, if you notice that you can't even turn your sternum, to the side, you need to regain the movements in the parts of your body that are not moving properly so that the movement patterns of whatever exercise you do can flow through the entire kinetic chain. Oh, I don't know, there's just 100 things else I could say. Is this what you're asking me? Is there something that I haven't quite answered?
No, I guess my next question then would be, how do you know when to seek out a physical therapist instead of trying to do it on your own?
If it's not getting better, if you've done everything that you know how to do, I'm a big fan of people assessing their own bodies and listening to their bodies and trying different movements or activities, backing off, that sort of thing. But if you've tried everything that you've tried and it's not going away, that's definitely the time to see someone, an expert, someone who's trained in looking at your body and teaching you, where the chain has broken down or where you need to balance off. It's often not what you think.
Right. And in terms of like timeline for recovery, what is a typical timeline? I know it can be different for different injuries and But in the current world we live in, people are like all about the quick fixes and this illusion that they're going to see someone once and they're going to be better. But what is like the truth when it comes to recovery?
Yeah, are you ready for it?
I don't
Basic healing time for anything, roughly, whether you have surgery or you cut something or you injure something, is a minimum of 6 weeks when the because the tissues have to mend, okay? Most people are in physical therapy for about 3 months to really rehab and to, it depends on how inflamed and how injured and how irritated, because the first thing you have to do is calm down the inflammation and calm down the irritation. Then you have to work on the mechanics and changing the mechanics. After that, you have to work on the motor patterning, so that it becomes, those mechanics become automatic. And that is a process, like pretty much everything in life that can, change you and improve your life. It is a process. Now, occasionally there's a patient who comes in and there's just one little thing that's out of whack, or they just need a little help with one thing, and you do a mobilization and things go back in order. And it's a patient who maybe, is very adept at exercise and knows their body, and you can give them something to go off on their own. But that is the exception rather than the standard.
Right. Yeah, that's the tough part is actually doing the work and, putting in the time to recover.
I
In
feel
terms
like,
of aging, what would be something that you want people to understand about their bodies and staying active as you age?
this is something that I had to learn the hard way myself, because I was always, I'm in my late 50s now, and my whole life I knew my body really well, and I could push it, and I knew how to push it, and I knew, and I loved pushing it and doing hard workouts and that sort of thing. And when I was about 45 or so, it wasn't working anymore. I was getting fatigued. I was getting worn down. I wasn't recovering from these workouts. And it took me a while to learn that my body was different. And I did much better with shorter, less intense workouts. And that was such a hard pill for me to swallow, because I had never functioned that way my entire life. But I do, I see it in older patients. Everyone can get better, everyone can make progress, but you need a little more recovery time. Growth hormone decreases when you get old, when you're older. Your body just doesn't recover or repair as quickly. And so you really just need to give yourself enough rest time. You decreased maybe the length of your workouts. And again, pay attention to fatigue and to what your body is telling you. Wait until you feel like you have recovered before you hit it hard again.
Yeah, and I think this one is for the ladies out there. As a woman in her 40s myself, I feel like my body changes a lot when it, in terms of my cycle and the different weeks out of the month. And so I feel like my muscles are like super strong and like really reactive and like on point with no pain for a couple weeks. And then other weeks when it comes closer to my cycle, I feel like they act a little bit differently. Like I'll have more like muscle aches and pains. Is there a correlation between muscle and cycle? This is for the ladies out there.
Yeah, there definitely is a correlation. Your body, right before your time of the month, your body releases oxytocin, which is the and the it releases the hormones that make you more flexible and a little less stable. Kind of the way, like if you're going into a pregnancy, there are hormones that are released so that you can be more flexible to allow the baby to come out. Well, close to your period, your body, your ligaments get a little bit more, this is just in general, a little more laxed because of the hormones that are released, and you might have a little less stability. So I would definitely pay attention to that. Again, listen attention to your body, you're telling me that certain times of the month you feel really strong and like you can push it, and other times you can't. So on those times, if you want to maintain your workout, the week or two before, that might be the time to focus on your Pilates or focus on a little more gentle yoga. Or if you're doing a heavy weight training routine, cut the sets or cut the reps a little bit. The thing that is going to allow you to maintain your fitness level and your strength is to work with this so that you don't injure yourself and that you can you can keep your workout going for the length of your lifetime, or so you but you have to listen to what your body is telling you.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for this conversation, Tonya. Can you tell everybody more about what you do?
Sure. I have a boutique physical therapy practice in Manhattan. 2 days a week, I'm in an office in the Flatiron area, and 2, 3 days a week, I'm doing concierge visits on the Upper East Side. So I spend an hour with my patients one-on-one. I'm a certified functional manual therapist. I do a lot of fascia work and body work, as well as pairing that with functional exercise to rewire people's bodies so that they can work in the patterns that were built into all of our bodies, allows them to play sports and to play a variety of sports and then to function in daily life.
Amazing. And where can people find more information about you?
Sure. I'm on Instagram at Tonic PT for you with a number 4. My website is tonicpt.com, and I have some courses on the Learn Worlds website, which is tonicphysicaltherapy.learnworlds.com.
Amazing. Is there any last minute thoughts you want to leave the audience with about shoulders and shoulder pain in general?
I would say if you're move your upper back first. If your shoulder's not moving, if your upper back is not moving, then all the work goes into your shoulder. So make sure your entire kinetic chain is moving. You have activation and mobility throughout the entire chain.
Thank you so much for being here. I know you're making me think of my shoulders differently. I'm already feeling them differently. Thanks so much for being here.
I've done my work then, if that's the case. Thank you so much. No, I just want everyone to remember that the body can heal and that you can keep playing and you can keep doing the things you love. If you just need to prep better and you need to move better and listen to your body.
Thank you so much. And to our audience, thanks for tuning in. We'll make sure to have Tonya's information in the show notes for you to check out her website and more of the work she does. Pay attention to those pain signals. And I'm going to stop telling people to relax their shoulders. Until next time, take care, everyone.